And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Massachusetts is in the midst of a great energy transition where the state is committed to decarbonizing itself, so there's no more carbon dioxide emissions. We have targets set in 2030 and 2050. Very, very important. Turns out that the built environment, we'll say that in quotation marks, buildings do emit a lot of carbon dioxide from burning oil and natural gas to heat those buildings, right? This is a big problem because there's not yet a coherent plan as to how we're going to address decarbonizing those buildings. In a recent show, we had the opportunity to talk with an expert who painted a wonderful picture of how Massachusetts can begin to decarbonize the housing sector, which is a big chunk of our emissions, by electrifying everything. Put that in quotation marks in the head. That is to say, to heat your home using electric heat pumps, which are, of course, similar to refrigerators in many respects. It's a great idea, great concept. But of course, everything needs detail, needs to be actually made to happen through legislation, right? These things don't happen by themselves. We need laws to encourage people to make this energy transition. And there is a proposed law out there that we are interested in learning more about. And to that end, we have been pleased to be rejoined by Ania Caramago, who is an expert in this stuff, and among other things, is on the campaign team, statewide campaign team for Mothers Out Front, which is a great climate nonprofit here in Massachusetts. She's the coordinator of an organization called Gas Leaks Allies, which has done great work. And she is on the board of an organization called HEET, H-E-E-T, which has been instrumental in creating a vision for how in Massachusetts we can use geothermal grids to address decarbonizing our economy at utility scale. So we're thrilled to have Ania back with us. Ania, how are you doing?
Great, Ted. Thank you for having me back.
Good. So I tried to point us towards a discussion of what I think is called the Future of Heat Bill. That's Did I get it more or less right? Can you tell us what people should know?
Well, the Future of Heat Bill was a collaboration between Senators Cream and Representative Elric and the Gas Leaks Allies, which is actually 30 organizations, nonprofits, primarily researchers, scientists, economists, working on how we transition our gas system to renewable thermal energy. And so the Future of Heat Bill aims to put in the supports, incentives, financial structures in place to allow the Massachusetts gas system to transition to non-emitting sources of energy in a way that's affordable, safe, reliable, equitable for ratepayers, and that includes labor.
Interesting. And so this bill exists, got a number, presumably. It's it's in the State House wandering around.
It has a number. The number is S2148 and H3298.
So those are both Senate and House versions of essentially the same bill.
That's right.
So tell me, what's in the bill?
So the one of the key concepts that I don't think a lot of people know is that gas companies are highly, highly regulated and can only sell gas. And so when you're asking gas companies to decarbonize and they can only sell gas, that's pretty tough. Unless you're saying, you know, it's the end of the gas companies. And so one of the things that we were thinking is for an equitable transition, that you need the utility companies who have all the customers, who have, like, they have all the know-how. We need to work with them to come up with a way to decarbonize the gas system, which is how the proposal came into place of the network geothermal grids. This bill is actually technology agnostic. It is not proposing one technology over another. It is more of a permissive bill that would allow gas companies to sell non-emitting renewable heating. And so it's like it becomes a thermal company versus this idea that they're selling just gas.
What you're saying is that as it stands now, the utilities are so highly regulated that they cannot sell you hot water, right? Because it's not gas. They are restricted to selling that one thing, and there you go. And so this bill addresses, at least among many other things, this one very simple fact, right?
Right. It would allow them to envision alternatives to how they heat our homes and potentially also could cool our homes, because they would be providing thermal energy. So, yeah. So that is, like, I think a really important piece of the bill is that permission. And then the rest of the bill is really a series of incentives and to guide how that could be done. And so it takes advantage of the existing program called the Gas System Enhancement Program that's currently in place to replace all pipes. And that program allows the gas utilities to basically get a 10% return on investment. And so what we're trying to do with this is say, okay, instead of replacing gas with gas, you would be able to use this GSIP money to replace it with renewable thermal infrastructure, for example, a geogrid as one technology, example. Mm-hmm. And then you would be able to use ratepayer back bonds to help finance that. So what that does is that even though there's a difference, you have a lower interest rate with ratepayer back bonds than if you went to the normal markets to borrow money. Mm-hmm. And so that differential we would use as savings. So it's money that we would be expected to spend on GSEP, but there would be a small differential that multiplied by a big number becomes a big number. And those savings we would use to help finance low-income housing retrofits and to train labor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, let me just say that back, make sure I got it. You've got you're saying, okay, that there is something called the Gas System Enhancement Program, or GSEP is the acronym, that is already committed to replacing repairing or replacing gas pipes. And you say, okay, whatever we're going to do, you're now going to be able to put, for example, you're agnostic, you don't care what, but for example, you could put geothermal warm water through these pipes, and the gas company could charge you for that. But then, because additionally the state is offering money, bonds, a loan to these guys at a lower rate, there's a differential, there's some excess money that is then used to make sure it's all equitable, right? And that we go out of our way to make sure we're all, is that a fair?
Yeah, so let me just step back a little bit. I think I may have jumped into there a little bit too fast. Uh-huh. So right now, the gas companies can repair their leaks. That is at about a cost, about $4,000 a leak. They get no interest on that. They can replace a pipe, and the replacing the pipe costs, depending on which utility company, they're all different, but on average about $2 million per mile of pipe. And they get a little under a 10% rate of return on that. And so it is financially better to replace than to repair. From the utility perspective, they would prefer to replace than to repair. The exception is that if you have large leaks, what are called grade 3 significant environmental impact leaks, these are the largest leaks, they can also use GSIP funds. This bill that we're saying would not change that. They could continue to do that. In addition, but we're saying, okay, fine, you can continue to do that. We love it that you're fixing the grade 3 SEIs, the big leaks, great, continue to fix those. But we're going to give you a financial incentive. When you replace pipes, we would allow you to have ratepayer back bonds so that it would in effect be a little cheaper to replace them with renewable thermal infrastructure. So that's one piece. We would also allow the gas companies to extend the life of pipes. So do advanced repair technologies and allow you to charge those expenses to GSEP instead of, if you did that now, you would get, you basically don't get anything above cost. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to incentivize two things. One is the transition to renewable thermal and the extension of the life of the pipes so that we're not replacing them. We're keeping them alive long enough until we can transition them to renewable thermal. So we're using GSEP to move the needle on how the gas utilities fix and replace pipe.
And that's okay. So I think I understand that better. And it seems like that's a very wise move because the funding and everything for the GSEP program is already baked in, right? It's simply redirecting existing monies pretty much. Right?
Well, sort of. I don't know if they're baked in. They've been approved. Mm-hmm. To do that. I mean, you could unapprove them if you wanted, but what we're saying is, you know, the infrastructure is really leaky. We have to deal with this. You can't just get rid of this stuff. It's GSEP is playing an important role. You know, we have miles and miles and miles of pipe under our street. We have to deal with this. We can't just make it go away. So we're saying, when you're fixing them, how about you fix them with something we like? The other incentive that's important that is in this bill is that if you replace pipe with gas pipe, so what they're doing now, you can only depreciate it until 2050, because ideally by that time we would not have gas. So you should only be able to depreciate gas pipe by 2050. The renewable thermal infrastructure pipe, we would allow you to depreciate over the life of that project, which would probably be the traditional 50, 60 years.
And that's interesting because forgive me for interrupting, but the utility would be faced with a choice if they want to put in new pipes that would take until 2060 to get paid for. That's a disincentive. They say, I'd much rather put in these thermal pipes with hot water in it because after 2050, it's all stranded and I don't get my money back. Right? That's the idea behind it.
So the idea, if you're forced to depreciate by 2050, the price will go up, right? Of the pipe, of installing gas pipe, where it's like if you can depreciate your infrastructure for a longer period of time, the price is lower. So we're trying to make it so that it's more expensive and less desirable to replace gas with gas, and less expensive and more desirable to replace gas with renewable thermal infrastructure. And I should say non-emitting renewable thermal infrastructure, because there are different ways to think about renewable thermal. And I think many people are right now counting things like hydrogen and renewable natural gas as renewable. And we would say that those are still emitting and so should not be counted for this kind of project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And tell me, if we went down that path, how would that protect jobs? Why should the, I don't know, what does it do for the economy?
So it is wonderful for jobs because it means that all of the gas workers and pipe fitters and everybody who's in this industry would be retrained and participate in this transition. And so they would be basically completely reconstructing the gas system and turning it into a renewable thermal. So people who are currently working in the system, and we would probably need many more, would be able to have these clean energy jobs. Mm-hmm. And these are folks who already work for these companies, and they get to keep those wages. And as I said before, the savings associated with the lower rates of the bonds would be used partially to train workers and partially for the low-income housing, for retrofitting low-income housing.
It's an interesting point that, I mean, we're talking about a massive construction project over the next decade, and probably the existing workforce at the utilities is too small by an order of magnitude, right? So you're going to be, highly trained people.
I guess it depends on how fast we allow the gas utilities to go, right? And how fast we encourage them to go.
Interesting. So tell me, what provisions in the bill address basically the sort of equity of the whole thing? So that, I mean, how's a renter going to fare? How is someone in a community that, you know, doesn't have the sort of financial power that other communities have? What's in it for them?
So I would say if from a low income homes, well, one, it would, their homes would be upgraded to be able to do this, right? So and this is for renters or owners. Homes, like if you're on a block, they're going to be trying to create incentives and get as much upgrading done to be able to do this. Of course, the air quality in your home is going to be better. You're going to get air conditioning, not only heating. And then I would say the biggest thing is that by doing it at utility scale, you are doing it across the board and across neighborhoods versus the one house at a time approach, which we talked about before, which is literally, if we did just electrification with air source heat pumps, then it is the lowest income who will be left with the stranded assets of the gas system, paying for the stranded assets of the gas system.
Interesting. So tell me, this bill, these bills, is S-2148 in the Senate and H-3298. Nothing you can look it up. I'm going to put it all on the blog, these numbers. You don't, but tell me, Ania, how, if someone listening to this podcast, how could they get involved to help make this happen? What do you need from people? Or what would you want people to do to support this?
Well, they could certainly write letters of support to their legislators. They can meet with their legislators to talk about these bills. The bill has been heard in the what's called the TUE committee, the Commission Utility and Energy Committee. And we had a lot of speakers who spoke at that very positively. And I think you can talk about it within your towns if there's new development. Proposed geogrids don't have to be built by utility companies. There is competition. Others can build these geogrids. College campuses are doing it all over the place. So I would encourage people to, when there's new developments, particularly big projects coming into neighborhoods, to have the developers and the town and the city to push for alternatives to installing new gas infrastructure. Because this is a wonderful way, in a cleaner way, to heat and cool homes. So you know, that also encourages the bill, because if you're seeing more and more of this on site, in different communities, then it makes it more plausible.
Where can people go to read about it? Is there a website that you've got for the
Gas Leaks Allies? If you go to the Gas Leaks Allies website, okay. You'll find out more information about the future of heat bill and really about everything that we're trying to do in terms of transitioning the gas system.
Uh-huh. And Gas Leaks Allies is literally Gas Leaks Allies, one word, .org. Org. Gas Leaks Allies. That'll be in the show notes. GasLeaksAllies.org. A lot of interesting stuff there. And a very informative, useful site.
That's right. Well, so can I just say one more thing that's really important?
Please do.
Which is, one of the things that people are very concerned about is how much electricity we're going to need on a new grid. And people are saying, you know, we could potentially have to expand the amount of electricity by 2, 3, 4 times what we're using now. Because, you know, if we electrify everything, including cars, how much electricity? And then we have to produce so much more electricity. So how we electrify really matters. It's not just about electrifying, but you want to use the technology that's most efficient at electrifying. And one of the best benefits of the network geothermal or the network geogrids is that they have a really high performance, a coefficient of performance in terms of how the amount of energy that you use, what's the multiplier effect of that energy. So by doing this, you're actually decreasing the amount of electricity the state is going to need. Because if you think about it, we're using the temperature of the earth. We're not needing the wind and the solar and the electric. All the electricity that is used for network geothermal is to operate the heat pump.
Wow, that's a great point. Very, very, because you're right, because we're rapidly sailing into a place where we're going to need a lot more electrons floating around just to keep everybody's car and whatnot going. Wow. Well, Ania, what I'll do is I'll put up links to the Gas Leaks Allies, and we'll point out specifically where the Future of Heat bill is on the website and some other stuff that we've talked about in this show. what that'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog, right? And the you can listen to the show, look at the links there. If you want, have a question about the show, suggestions, ideas of things we ought to talk about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. That's an email, podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to us on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Google or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, one of those things. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities in order to safeguard our collective future. So, Ania, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on the future of heat bill.
My pleasure, Ted. Nice talking with you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.